in-depth look at the engaging debate on US, China, and global issues. This is The Heat.
Hundreds of students and teachers protesting the Biden administration's policies in Gaza have been arrested. Some colleges have cancelled graduation ceremonies amid security fears. Meanwhile, Donald Trump's so-called hush money trial enters its second week as the White House incumbent Joe Biden hits the campaign trail to convince voters he deserves a second term. So, lots to discuss. Let's bring in our guests. Joining us here in Washington, D.C. is Joel Rubin. He is a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Legislative Affairs. From Miami, Jaden Horan is a political analyst. Also in Florida, Jeffrey Swartz is a law professor at Cooley Law School and a former county judge in Florida. And Adolfo Franco is an attorney and Republican strategist. Welcome to all of you. Adolfo, let's start right here in the studio with a CNN poll that came out this weekend. Seems to be good news for Donald Trump. It shows Donald Trump still in the lead over Joe Biden, 49 to 43. That's a 6 percentage point lead. That same poll tells us 55% of Americans say Trump's presidential term was a success, while 44% said it was a failure. So I'm kind of wondering, 6 months out from the election, what do these numbers mean for Trump, especially as he's now spending all his days in court?
Well, that means President Trump is on his way to election to be reelected president of the United States. At this same time, exactly, at the end of April, 4 years ago, President Trump was at 46% approval rating. At this same time, in 1992, President Bush's father was at 42%. Those two did not win reelection. Conventional wisdom here in Washington says that an incumbent needs to hover around 50% approval to win re-election. These are the worst numbers possible. Now, the other guests are going to say it's too early. We've been hearing that for a long time, whether it's Donald Trump or this. Every time they say that, I don't know how many times on this program, President Trump's lead only widens. This is a national poll, I understand. Yeah. That should be frightening for Democrats, because when you look at the state polls that are really the states where he is really the election is going to be decided, he's also decisively ahead in Nevada by double digits, a state that he lost. So these are terrible numbers. What this reflects to me, been old enough to be around, this is the Jimmy Carter syndrome. It's sticking. These numbers have been low and terrible since his first year in office. And the underlying other question is, not only are you better off under President Trump, but majority of American people say that, his approval rating on everything, whether it's the economy, immigration, on everything, is below President Trump, often by double digits. So certainly on the number one issues, which is the economy and immigration and the other salient issues that are before us. So what is it? The only strategy, which I know we'll talk about later on the show, which has been designed from day one, is try to destroy Donald Trump by manipulating and weaponizing the judicial system to get him either off the ballot or to affect his numbers, because he can't win on policy, Biden.
Joel, I know you're going to disagree with that, but you know, some of the numbers showed even more bad news for Biden. I mean, that CNN survey also says 61% think Biden's presidency is a failure, 39% said it's a success. And as Adolfo just told us, among the issues contributing to these bad numbers are things like the economy, inflation, healthcare policy, student debt, and Gaza policy. You know, if you look at some of these things, do the Democrats actually have a problem with their policies, or do they have a problem with their messaging?
Well, I think we have a problem with the American people being in a real crabby mood. Let's just be blunt. There is a lot of anger and unhappiness out there. The Trumpnesia side, which is sort of a bizarre situation that Americans, we love former presidents who were horrible. For example, George W. Bush started a war that devastated the country, devastated Iraq, presided over the financial collapse, and now Americans think of him as some great president. Not at the time. That aside, I do think we have to remember that what really matters are the elections and the numbers of when people come out to vote. And in every referendum, And in the midterms and in every special election, Democrats overperform the polls because this is about much more. And in Democratic circles, people talk this way. Yeah. This is about much more than just one man. This is about the future of the country. Yeah. And Democratic voters are mobilized. So even if they're unhappy with the situation in the moment with the polling, that's not all they're thinking about in this election.
What else are they thinking about?
They're thinking about their pocket, keeping American democracy.
Really? No, they're thinking about the grocery store.
Very briefly, quickly, Joel, 6 months out, is he going to be able to turn those numbers
down? No.
Yes, he will be able to turn them into an electoral victory. Yeah. And we still may see analogous numbers. Yeah. But that doesn't mean people won't come out and vote for their future, the future of American democracy, and a woman's right to choose.
And I'll save this tape.
Jaden Horan, great to see you, Jaden. There were some other numbers that came out this weekend which were very interesting, and concerning the flow of information, how people get their information about what is going on in the country. And it certainly seems to be playing a role in voting behavior, because those who follow traditional media, what we sometimes call the mainstream media, support Biden over Trump. It's the other way around when you look at social media and digital media. And those who don't follow the news at all, they overwhelmingly support Donald Trump. I mean, how does one explain that? And what does this tell us about trust in the media?
Well, we can explain it by traditional media bias, right? What we do know is that the media overwhelmingly leans left, ideologically speaking. They self-identify. The overwhelming majority of donations from members of the traditional media go to members of the Democratic Party. And, you know, their news reflects their slant. Now, that being said, I also do believe that it demonstrates that non-traditional media, digital media, social media, allows other voices to break through, and I think we should definitely celebrate that. As for people who don't get their media and are supporters of Donald Trump, I think that's because they just have chosen to disengage, and they don't want to hear what is generally designed in almost a clickbaity fashion on the traditional media outlets. I myself rarely consume traditional media because when I turn it on, it is uniformly against former President Trump. And I try to find the nuance to understand, all right, you know, I may agree with this point of view, but how is it wall-to-wall coverage when there's so much more going on in the political landscape of 2024? From the House to the Senate, there's other things going on in the world besides Donald Trump. But Donald Trump gets ratings, and traditional media is dying, and they need ratings. So that's really how we can explain that fixation, and also on the fact that if they're fixated on him and it's uniformly negative, it would also logically follow that those that consume it are biased because of the slant.
Because what we very often hear, Jaden, is that people go to the media that they agree with. So, in other words, you know, people who watch Fox News, they get a lot of comfort from the fact that they're hearing things that they believe in.
They want to hear.
I absolutely agree with you. I think one of the challenges of the 21st century media landscape is it really throws us back into the late 19th century media landscape, where essentially there are media outlets that operate as basically surrogates for party voices.
Yeah.
And you can self-select what you support. You know, back in the late 19th century, early 20th century, we had something called yellow journalism, right? Where, you know, Democratic Party outlets, Republican Party outlets essentially were media outlets. And they disseminated their information to their favored media outlet. Yeah. And in the middle of the 20th century, media realized there was such a crisis that they went objective, non-biased standard, and they labeled that previous iteration of media as yellow journalism. And we're back there now. Yeah. People self-select, and because they self-select, it's an echo chamber of what.
Right, it's an echo chamber. Yeah. Jeff, good to see you, Jeff.
Good to see you.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on where this election is heading? Because you know those numbers that I cited earlier on. I mean, they are national numbers, you know, the way the election would go nationally. And as we are fully aware, this isn't a national election for president. This is a state-by-state affair where the outcome is really divided by a handful of states. In fact, a handful of counties, one could say. So do you think it's not yet time for the Democrats to hit the panic button?
No, It really isn't time for them to hit the panic button. We have a whole summer in front of us, and we have a whole summer of other things that are going to occur. Obviously, President Biden is being hurt by the fact that interest rates to buy homes is not going down. He's being hurt by the economy itself, because the economy is roaring, probably too hot for where we should be right now. And they're seeing inflation. And when they go and they look for eggs and they look for bread, the prices are much higher. When it comes to interest rates, I can remember a time when 6% interest was a very low interest rate. We're just, as an economy, as a society, we're used to free money. And we don't want to pay for the use of other people's money. That's really been the problem.
Yeah.
Whatever that may be, I think that the question that has to be answered and will be answered is, do you believe in democracy? And if you do believe in democracy, then you have to listen to the positions of both the parties as it relates to whether that democracy will continue. You also have to think, do I believe in liberty and freedom? And that is, for women, do I believe in the right to choose? Or am I going to elect people that are going to tell me what to do? This seems to be a reversal. Republicans for years said, you know, we don't want people telling us what to do. Now they want to get in the business of telling people what to do. So I also believe that a real problem that is really festering right now is a lack of belief in the American public, in the American judicial system. Not because they think Donald Trump's being picked on, but because the judicial system at this point is headed up by a SCOTUS that is, in fact, in my opinion, I don't want to use the word corrupt, but incredibly slanted towards one position over another, and very, very hypocritical.
It's corrupt when it's not his point of view. It's okay when they make things up whole cloth out of the Constitution. Yeah. But, you know, Jeffrey's right. This election is going to be decided on democracy and what the people want in terms of liberty. On democracy, they're going to decide whether they want to see a system of persecution and weaponization of the judicial system to go against their political opponents.
All the
polling shows that. When you have these Democrat hacks in these Democrat jurisdictions going after President Trump for persecuting him with these hope like this so-called hush money trial, totally made up. This is about democracy in that way, and on liberties. Yes, we don't want the nanny state. Yeah. And you know what? The Supreme Court was right in reversing Roe, because it's up to the people in these jurisdictions.
I want to stop you there very, very quickly. You mentioned the hush money trial. Ended its first week. It's now in its second week. What did we learn in the first week?
Oh, it's a trial in search of a crime. That's what we're learning. We're looking. I still don't know where the so-called felony is. I think, by the way, Jeffrey, if subjective here is, I think there's reversible error here already, what the judge has done. In this particular case, is he's introducing things and referring to felonies. President Trump's not been charged with anything, any felony. President Trump's not been convicted of any felony. He hasn't even been fined civilly on FEC. This is, remember, the underlying basis, because the charges were brought, just be clear to the viewers, on misdemeanors where the statute of limitation has run, state charges. So the underlying crime, which has just not been charged, this is a kangaroo court. And this thing, their hope is there's some conviction with a Manhattan liberal jury, and that will somehow taint President Trump on appeal if that were to happen.
Yeah.
This is never going to be sustained. This is why, talking about democracy, this is why democracy is at stake with the manipulation of the judicial system.
Democracy at stake. The central concern of the American people and the Democratic Party in this instance is that Donald Trump led and organized an insurrection to overthrow the Constitution
and to
subvert the actual legitimate transfer of power from one individual to another.
Has he been charged with that?
They keep on delaying the trial.
No. Has President Trump been charged with the New York?
Let me explain, if I may, the New York, and I'll let Jeffrey get into the technicals, but the New York case, why is it relevant? Because Donald Trump actively attempted to and did prevent information from being provided.
Hang on a minute. I want to get to Jeff.
Just not true.
Jeff, this is how the week ended last week.
this is how the two sides summed up at the end of the week. One side, the prosecution, said this is election fraud, pure and simple. And then the defense said there's nothing wrong with trying to influence an election. It's called democracy.
Right. And the idea that one side would say it is democracy to mislead the people and to hide things from them is not democracy. The idea of democracy is that the candidates are supposed to at least be trying to speak the truth. Here, that's not what happened, and that really is, at least under certain law, a crime. However, I'm going to say this. I sat on the bench, Adolfo. I don't think you have.
No, I'm not.
I'm going to tell you that, in fact, I haven't seen reversible error yet. What? I have the explanation of what the indictment says. It's not reversible error by a judge who tells the jury that's what the charges are. That does not mean that the instructions will say the things that shouldn't be said. To the same extent, there's a lot going on
okay.
here.
I'll get back to you in a moment. I just want to get to Jaden. Jaden, when we look at these political, at least these legal challenges that Donald Trump is facing right now, and then we look at the polling numbers, what does that tell us about how the public views these trials?
And this is exactly the concern I think Democrats should have, is that the political implications in an election year of utilizing the judicial system to essentially tie Donald Trump to a courtroom prevents the unforced errors that they relied on in 2020. I don't understand whatever tactic was dreamed up in the Democratic smoke rooms of believing that the timing of these in the 2024 cycle would be advantageous, because the American people are looking at this and they're saying, okay, well, each of these charges and each of these cases taken apart and separate, all right, fine. But Donald Trump is not out there saying incendiary things. Instead, he's in a courtroom doing what every defendant ought to do, does do, which is rail against the case against them. It's normal. So Americans don't find that bizarre. They don't find it unseemly. They don't find it unacceptable. And they, in fact, would do it themselves. We just had O.J. Simpson die recently, right? That brings back memories of a robust defense in court by a celebrity. So it's not playing well with the American people, and it's not.
A couple of things I want to say about this is to Jeffrey's point. These so-called charges, which have not been made, the felonies, number one is, the Justice Department looked at this. These are federal. The FEC looked at this. They said there was no basis and passed on it. This political hack's predecessor, until he ran for office and he was going to persecute President Trump, passed on it as well. This statute of limitation has run. Yes, I think there is a base. I respect Jeffrey. He sat on the bench. Judges disagree. That's why judges are reversed. Okay. But here's the bottom line this. This, for example, I hope the Weinstein thing you can talk about sometime. He's brought into this case, the McDoodle, this Playboy thing. I know this is a lot of the details. But this thing is so fraught with mistakes and novel theories. It will be reversed, and I want to be on this show when it is reversed.
Okay, Joel?
The only thing I'll say is I agree with Jaden wholeheartedly, and this demonstrates, it points out why this is not some cooked-up Democratic conspiracy.
It is.
This is a case proceeding as the case proceeds. There is no Democratic plot to put Donald Trump in jail. The reality is that he's being tried because there are crimes that were identified.
Okay, Jeff, there's another case, Jeff, that's going on right now. Not a case, it's a hearing at the United States Supreme Court on whether Donald Trump, as a former president, or former presidents in general, have some level of immunity. And looking at some of the reporting by people who cover the Supreme Court every day, it seems that the court will agree with him that not totally, but he will be granted some level of immunity.
Well, you know, and I'm a little concerned, because all you have to do is go back to the Constitutional Convention back in the 1700s when they were debating the powers of the presidency. And James Wilson, who is one of the least known founding fathers, but one of the most influential ones, was during the drafting of the Constitution. And I want to make sure I quote this opera, so I'm going to read it. He asked the question, whether the president enjoyed, quote, a single privilege or security that does not extend to every person throughout the United States. Yeah. Is there a single distinction attached to him in this system more than there is to the lowest officer in the Republic? Yeah. And the convention was unanimous in the answer, no, he does not. Therefore, what is happening here is talking about making things out of whole cloth.
Yeah.
Supreme Court is about to give a president immunity out of whole cloth.
Right. Okay.
There no immunity in the Constitution for anybody.
Yeah. Jaden, doesn't Jeff have a point there? Because we're told very often that nobody is above the law.
I mean, no one is above the law. However, if an official is doing something in their official capacity and then they try to criminalize it, that is an entirely different order of constitutional law. I mean, I'm not a lawyer here, but I can say this. If we are parsing out actions done by President Trump versus actions done by candidate Trump, then there is an argument. But if you're saying whole cloth that the president picking up the phone as President of the United States and calling someone is itself a criminal act and there would be no immunity, then we better open the book for every past president.
Okay.
You can open up charges.
Yeah, right. That is entirely correct.
Yeah.
Two things. I find it humorous that my friends on the left bring up the Constitutional Convention. They certainly don't do that when they talk about gun rights. Oh, it's a different context, so forth. But let me tell you on this.
I need to move away from the legal issues. I want to get to Joel and ask him about...
Hang on a minute. When he acts in his official capacity, he cannot be charged criminally.
Okay. I want to get to another issue that we talked about at the beginning of the show, and that is Biden's handling of the Gaza conflict. And how it's affecting his numbers.
Yeah.
We now see student demonstrations sweeping across the country. We see it on our screens all the time, what's happening on campuses. The president is scheduled to give a commencement address at Morehouse in Atlanta. This is how one student at that college responded to that. Let's listen.
People say he's just doing this to garner votes. My response to that is yes, obviously. He's not purely coming here for altruistic reasons.
So, what kind of impact is this having on his support?
Without a doubt, this is a hard, bitter pill for the Democratic base right now to swallow. The president is standing firm with Israel. He's also promoting support for Palestinian human rights. He's pushing Prime Minister Netanyahu, pushing for aid to get into Gaza, trying to find a diplomatic path on a ceasefire. But the base of the party is deeply unhappy, and we see that. All that said, in recent votes in Congress, 75% of the House and nearly 80% of the Senate overwhelmingly supported Israel aid, including just 3 senators voting against from the president's party. So I think that if he were to go too hard in the other direction, he might have blowback as well.
Those numbers,
it's just a hard one.
Those numbers you mentioned in Congress, is that really representative of the way voters are thinking right now?
No.
Yeah, I think the voters, I think that there are strong numbers of support for Israel and deep concern about Israel's war and the way it's conducting the war. And I think the way the president is trying to promote how he is trying to shape it, that is helping his numbers. But clearly, this war has cost so many lives that that's what's causing the deep angst.
This has led to some suggestions, Adolfo. I mean, one coming from the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who says, look, what university should do right now is deport foreign students and cut federal funding to universities where these demonstrations are taking place.
Well, I think real and significant, I want to use the word extreme measures need to be taken. I think what's going on in these campuses is absolutely outrageous. And there is no First Amendment right to obstruct the First Amendment rights of other people. There's no First Amendment right to stop classes. There's no First Amendment. You can do all the protesting you want. It's going well beyond that.
Yes, they've stopped
Columbia and the rest of it. They've obstructed. They've stopped traffic. They've done so forth. That's not peaceful demonstrations. You don't have a right to disrupt anyone else's life. But here's the key. I disagree with Joel. I don't think the president has been strong enough for Israel. I think he's pressuring the Netanyahu government. I think that's a mistake. President Trump is fully on Israel's side. I think they're in a pretzel. Joe was trying to spin it.
The president just shut down 300 Iranian missiles coming to Israel. It's pretty strong.
They are pressuring Israel. In a way that Donald Trump will not press Israel. I think these student demonstrations are pro-Hamas.
Yeah.
I think I think federal funding and other measures, this universities have said they're taking measures to suspend students and they do nothing.
All right.
The more this permissiveness continues, more of these disruptions will only take place.
All right, that is where we have to leave it. We have run out of time. Thanks to all of you for being with us. That's it for this edition of The Heat. I'm Anand Naidu in Washington, D.C.